Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
Homes.com knows that when it comes to home shopping, it's never just about the house or condo. It's about the home. And what makes a home is more than just the house or property. It's the location and neighborhood. If you have kids, it's also schools, nearby parks, and transportation options. That's why Homes.com goes above and beyond to bring home shoppers the in-depth information they need to find the right home. And when I say in-depth, I'm talking deep. Each listing features comprehensive information about the neighborhood, complete with a video guide. They also have details about local schools with test scores, state rankings, and student-to-teacher ratio. They even have an agent directory with the sales history of each agent. So when it comes to finding a home, not just a house, this is everything you need to know, all in one place. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
My mission is simple: to make you money. I'm here to level the playing field for all investors. There's always a bull market somewhere, and I promise to help you find it. Mad Money starts now.
Hey, I'm Cramer. Welcome to Mad Money. Welcome to Cramerica. Other people want to make friends. I'm just trying to save you a little money. My job is not just to entertain, but to educate, to teach you. So call me at 1-800-743-CNBC. Tweet me at Jim Cramer. Cash? Cash is rook. Okay, we say cash is king when the market is so ugly that you just want to get out now.
Sell.
I can't endorse that here because I like the market longer term. But after a session where the Dow dipped 43 points, the S&P inched up 0.02%, NASDAQ advanced 0.1%, I'd be lying if I told you I feel great about this market. What's wrong with it? Well, earnings tonight, for one, and especially the forecast, and we're going to get to those. But let's start with what I think is the real elephant in the room. Let's start with the bond market, which, of course, is much bigger than the stock market, as I always tell you, and its power bleeds into the stock market every day and has been bleeding in a bad way. How does it do that? Simple. When the government sells bills, notes, and bonds to pay for the deficit, it really weighs on everything. Consider it a gigantic sideshow that can really hurt your portfolio. Just this week, you've got a huge $44 billion 7-year bond auction. That's tomorrow. On top of today's $70 billion 5-year note auction, that's an awful lot of bond supply, especially on top of the $69 billion sale of 2-year notes we got yesterday. Talk about cash is rook. The bond market now has gotten so compelling to so many people because it's been going down that they want to buy some of these bonds, which means they often need to sell stock in order to swap out of equities and into the bond market. They have to raise cash to buy bonds. Makes sense, right? You need a lot of buyers to come in and buy these bonds because so much is being for sale. And for many, that means to cash your stocks in order to be able to
buy
the bonds. Now, I know that treasuries are risk-free. Terrific. And if you think that the Fed will eventually cut rates this year, well, then the 2-year, it was a really interesting piece of paper, around 5%. I bought some yesterday. But remember, I can't buy stocks. 2-year, good. But how about this 5-year note with a 4.66% yield? That was today's business. Or the 7-year yield, 7-year, which I think is going to be similar tomorrow? Sorry, to me, they are not real value. I want a higher yield going out further. Others will, too. And if that's the case, then bond yields will have to move higher, price to bonds lower, okay, to bring in more buyers. The impact on the bond market and then the stock market would be immediate. In a world where long-term bond yields keep climbing, stocks will head down, like they always do when rates go up. Even if rates are going up because of too much supply issued all at once from the government and not inflation, and not because of a lack of demand by buyers. We had 3 big declines this year, all related to the bond market. The Treasury Department can't just issue short-term paper, so it separates out the years and does it that way. But each auction has its own character. I wonder how many people tomorrow want to lock in at almost 4.7% rate for 7 years. The one thing I do know is I can't gauge that. What it means is you got a total wild card, right? A total wild card in the bond market that can impact stocks? Bonds need to go up in price and down in yield with this heavy schedule of bond issuance. I think we're going to get the opposite of that. That makes me concerned, which brings me to the second reason why cash is rook. There are plenty of stock people who only believe that the only thing that matters is earnings. Earnings truly matter more than anything else. If earnings are great, then stocks will go up. And very often that is true. A bunch of stocks have done well after reporting good numbers this earnings season. Hey, last night, Texas Instruments said inventories and some types of its chips have finally been worked off. There have been a big glut in semiconductors for the auto industry. With that glut worked off, Texas stock exploded higher today. That sent up the other auto-related chip makers like onsemi Microchip. Okay, I get that. Tesla stocks hit the whole year in what felt like a death spiral. However, when Elon Musk told a good story about how he'll have cheaper electric vehicles and a viable plan for robo-taxis, people went nuts and the stock shot up 12%. And you knew he was going to do that.
Bye.
He did pull the proverbial out of the hat, like I told you. Although Tesla's actual numbers were suboptimal, Musk is great at pitching these things. Wow, is he a compelling salesman. Nothing matter that. But these winners feel like they're one-offs to me. I don't know about you. And there's no doubt in my mind that if we get a sloppy Treasury auction tomorrow, then these stocks will give up those gains. By the way, I also see Meta and IBM down a great deal in after hours. I know that Meta's quarter was strong, but the guy was weak. More on that in a second. It could be an opportunity if he gets hit too hard, even though it's way above my basis for the charitable trust. Now, I feel more bullish if the market were what we call oversold. But my gauge that I use is called the S&P Short Range Oscillators from Market Edge, and it is barely oversold at minus 1.66. Minus 5 means there's too much selling pressure and we are due for a bounce. We're nowhere near that. We don't have that situation. That means, you know what? We don't have the wind at our back. Cash would be king if we were overbought right here. We can't be that negative with the market somewhat oversold, though. Hence why cash is still rook. All right, let's talk about Meta, because that's all anyone's going to be talking about tomorrow. I'd like to give you a preview. The actual quarter is very, very strong. Sizable sales and earnings beat, healthy advertising numbers, solid 7% user growth. However, the stock's getting eviscerated in after hours.
Sell, sell, sell.
Because people didn't love the guidance. Meta's second quarter revenue forecast was a little light, and their full-year capital expenditures are going to be much higher than expected. I think these investments are justified. Mark Zuckerberg knows what he's doing, but it's not what Wall Street wants to hear in this environment. It's a skittish environment. Now, I can see how Texas Instruments and Tesla could rally on news that there's better than feared, even though Tesla had negative free cash flow to the tune of $2.5 billion. Musk is a showman. He was very convincing that his robo-taxi service would be like Airbnb, that you'd summon them and that you can stay in them. I like this elevator analogy, too. At one point, there were professional elevator operators. You'd tell them what floor you wanted to go on, and they'd stop there. Then we collectively decided to just let anybody push the buttons, everything changed. Could be the same with taxis. But even as there were some winners today, there are also plenty of companies with stocks that look like they're going great guns, only to get crushed intraday. Let me give you an example. Boeing. Okay. Now, this stock opened up. I was there. We asked Dave Calhoun questions this morning at Squawking Street. And, you know, they're mixed emotions. The stock opened at 176, and that was up. That was more than $7 above yesterday's close. Whew. Despite the fact that the quarter was truly nothing to write home about with extremely negative cash flow, kind of like Tesla, and no real sense of when management can right the ship. In a good market, Boeing stock would build on that advance. In a bad market, it pirouettes and goes straight down.
Sell, sell, sell.
The latter is exactly what happened. I need you to get into the heads of the people who were buying when Boeing opened higher. They didn't care where they bought it, and they got picked off. They're now natural sellers. I see stocks like that all over the place. Real landmines everywhere you look. Take Nucor, which we had on last night. A fine, the best steel company in the world. I thought CEO Leon Topalian told a good story about how his company missed the quarter. To me, Leon clearly felt badly that he missed guidance, and I think he'll be able to straighten it out fairly soon. But he said that the next quarter will be even weaker. Here's the problem. Too many buyers agree with me. Nucor's stock opened at 175. It got real positive, ran up to 178. But then, like Boeing, the stock pirouetted and fell to 172. Because remember, the quarter was truly disappointing. Only a treacherous market has that kind of action, though. And I don't like treacherous markets. Finally, we had our monthly investing club meeting this morning at noon today. It's on, you can go listen to it. And as much as I want to think that I like all the stocks we own for the charitable trust that's connected to the club, I found myself couching and hedging and cautioning about so many stocks over the near term that it was quite chilling. When you own more than 30 stocks, you can only recommend a half dozen stocks to buy at this very moment. That's the ultimate sign that cash is rook. It's not king because there are still some stocks that are worth buying right here. If cash were king, you'd be selling, selling, and selling. But too few of them right now to justify buying hand over fist. So let me give you the bottom line. We've been in this sell-off for over a month, and I still think it's a dicier time than most investors seem to believe, as you would get if you looked at Meta this evening. That's okay. We have cash for the charitable trust. I hope you have some, too. Cash may not be king right now, but it certainly isn't pawn either. I want to take calls. I'm going to go to Austin in Massachusetts. Austin.
With McDonald's coming in at 300 starting the year and now trading at just around 270, what can we see coming in like that. This is Austin from Westfield State. Shout out Dr. Fiore.
Okay, terrific. Now, we know Chipotle had good numbers, but I have to tell you, I think McDonald's offerings are too expensive. They raise the prices too much, and they've got to cut the price. And nobody wants to have to cut price. But to me, the stock is signaling they need to cut. They raise the price too much. They got to bring them down. Let's go to Arthur, my home state of New Jersey. Arthur.
Hey, Jim. How are you?
I am good, Arthur. How are you?
I'm great. Jim, I just want to say thank you, man. I've been following you for the last 23 years. And I tell you, you are on point with so much. I've made a lot of money, and I lost money because I didn't listen to you.
Arthur, you're very kind. I made some good calls and some bad calls. All I want to do is have the calls, the good calls outweigh the bad calls. Let's go to work.
Okay, listen. I bought Moderna at $369 a share, and it's killing my portfolio.
Yeah.
I've been holding on to it for a while, and I said, okay, it's going to come back a little, then it's not coming back. Then it goes up, and then it goes down. Jim, what should I do with this? I hate to take the loss because it's a big loss.
I know, and we should never care, though, about where a stock came from. We got to care where it's going to, but I agree with you. Moderna has special technology. I don't want to lose the stock here, but they announced a collaboration this morning with OpenAI, and I thought that the stock was up 8 at one point, and again, right back down. There are sellers everywhere in Moderna. You're going to have to wait until they really do invent the personal vaccines that they promised when they started, and I'm talking about en masse vaccines, but thank you for your kind words. All right, cash may not be king right here, but it certainly isn't pawn either. Well, man, tonight, going down, that's what the stock of Otis did today after earnings. So, are investors getting a viable dip in the elevator maker? I've got the CEO. Then the legendary Larry Williams is out with a bold call on where the market could be headed. I think you want to know what he's saying, consulting the technicals. And earlier today, we convened our monthly meeting for the CNBC Investing Club members, and we had so many incredible questions that we saved some of them for tonight. And yes, indeed, we read your names. You don't want to miss it, so stay with Cramer.
Don't miss a second of Mad Money. Follow at Jim Cramer on X. Have a question? Tweet Cramer. Hashtag Mad Mentions. Send Jim an email to madmoney@cnbc.com or give us a call at 1-800-743-CNBC. Miss something? Head to madmoney.cnbc.com.
Fact. Running a business is not getting easier on your wallet. With higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. Also a fact, smart businesses are reducing costs and headaches by graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You can cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. See how you'll profit with NetSuite, and then you can think of all the ways you could be spending the money you save. Company retreat in Malibu, anyone? By popular demand, NetSuite is offering a one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to NetSuite.com to start saving.
When you're hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging to connect with candidates faster. Plus, 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Mad Money. Just go to Indeed.com/Mad Money right now and support this show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Mad Money. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
All right, here's a question. What do you do with the stock of Otis Worldwide, the world's leading maker of elevators and escalators, which also has gigantic service and repair business? This morning, Otis reported before the bell, and the numbers were, what some people would say, mixed. Revenue came in a bit light. Earnings came in a bit better than expected. Management raised their full-year earnings forecast. But the stock got hit, though, down more than 4%. I think it was because we had some cautionary comments about China, maybe where the company lowered its full-year equipment sales outlook, but it really wasn't all that bad. Hey, maybe you're getting a good entry point here. Or do we need to be more worried about China or North America, for that matter? Let's check in with Judy Marks. She's the chair, president, and CEO of Otis Worldwide to get a better sense of the quarter and what comes next. Ms. Marks, welcome back to Mad Money.
Hi, Jim. Great to be with you again.
Okay, well, I have to tell you, I am a huge student of what you report. And you deliver what you say you're going to deliver. And I think this time, because you did that, it wasn't enough. Maybe you've just beaten the numbers too often for people to not expect something really huge from you each time.
Well, thanks, Jim. It's not about beating numbers for us. It's about executing our operational strategy and really this quarter delivering for our customers. Service-driven business, top line up 3.8% organic, 6.5% from our service business, drove about $50 million of profit, 80 basis points of margin expansion over an already strong quarter last year, which drove EPS up 10% to 88 cents. And then just as important, we delivered for our shareholders, Jim. And that's our capital strategy. Bought back 300 million shares in the first quarter, increased our outlook for the year now to $1 billion, as well as last night we raised our dividend almost 15%, which has doubled our dividend since we spun. So really pleased with the results, great performance by the team.
Yeah, and we should talk about the dividend. There's only been a few dividend boosts that were bigger than yours. How do you go about choosing that number? Because that's hefty, and you've already done what I think, look, our viewers really want is that dividend. Obviously, it's very important to you, too.
Yeah, it's very important, and we try to target about a 40% ratio, which we think is about the right place, and we'll grow past that as earnings continue to grow. We've driven earnings ever since we spun, and we're going to continue to do that, and that's why we raised our guide, and we increased the low end of our EPS outlook for the year. It's now 383 to 390, and obviously, as the service business modernization repairs grow through the year, we'll continue to revisit that.
We're starting to see many different grades of steel come down in price. Obviously, your input costs are going in the right direction.
They are. I mean, steel's 80% of our commodities. We've locked in 80% of our steel for the year. The biggest place that helps us is primarily in China as well as in North America. And we've been taking advantage of that and offsetting any other labor costs, any other challenges in the market. But we're getting price, Jim. So, we're gonna exercise everything we can to reduce costs, to drive productivity, as well as getting price on new equipment and service.
Right now, there was a critical moment in the conference call, which was, I think, actually like a false negative, where there was an analyst, not going to mention his name, who was begging you kind of to call a trough in China. Now, you know China in two different ways. One, you know it in the elevator business, but also you know the country. I felt that your answer was correctly circumspect because there are major issues in China that really don't have anything to do with elevators, right?
Yeah, so the China market is 10 million of the 22 million elevators in the world are installed in China and need service there. Right now, we're experiencing, and it's year three of confidence. Liquidity challenges with the developers and consumer confidence. So I'm not going to prematurely call a trough. When we see that part of the business turn around on the new equipment side, on the building side. But I can tell you, having been in China just last month, there is still urbanization going on. There's still construction going on. And there's even more service repair and modernization. So China, up to us, has become more of a service business. Jim, you've said it before. It's all about service and safety.
Well, look, I just think that but people don't seem to understand. I mean, I've been in a business where I had to worry about the service and safety. There is no skimping on safety. And that's in any country. It doesn't matter how poor the country is. The way you lose your government loses its standing is if you don't care about safety.
Yeah, you have to care about people. We are in a regulated industry, has been since the safety brake was invented by our founder. And because of that, people trust us. And 2.3 billion people a day use our equipment, Jim, and there's 22 million elevators in the world today. It's a great opportunity. Again, needs technology refresh for the aging elevators. We call that modernization. Needs replenishment there. That market's going to grow at least high single digits everywhere in the world.
Okay, let's do talk about orders. It's only fair. You talk about you had a double-digit decline in the Americas and high teens decline in China. Do I have to worry about the Americas?
No, Americas for us was a compare. We had some great large infrastructure wins in Canada, same quarter last year. We saw in this quarter, the second half of last year, construction slowed down a bit. All the indices would indicate that. But we saw it slow down less this quarter. So we believe it's turning. It's not growing yet, but it's turning in terms of new equipment construction. But, you know, we started the year and we said it was going to be a down year. It's playing out exactly how we thought, except with China being a little more down. But we had called out that the units were going to be down. We're not worried about North America. We've got a great new product that we're shipping now called our Gen 3 Core. Covers 80% of the market. So we're looking for America to have some strong. And our Americas team, Jim, 15% up in revenue this quarter. So we've got backlog. We're working through it, whether it's new equipment, repair. Our teams are dedicated. They're serving their customers. And North America is going to be fine.
Oh, that's good. Okay, one last question. Secretary Blinken is over in China, and I made some comments this morning that I think may have been a little too flip. I said, I don't know what they have to talk about because we obviously just play hardball and everything. Are there things that we discuss with China that are, I don't want to say convivial because it's not like that are workmanlike, that are about business and getting things done, that are not contentious?
Absolutely. When I was at the China Development Forum last month, it really was about economic development, foreign direct investment, and how can they create an environment where American companies can do business. Elevators are not national security. They are here to move people safely throughout the world, including in China. And we're proud to have been, we're going to be celebrating 40 years in China this fall, Jim. It's an important business to us. We're proud of our team over there. And we're going to continue to pivot more and more to service and modernization. Hey, our mod orders in China and our mod sales are up double digit. Our mod orders for the quarter globally, we're up almost 13%. And we've got a 15% backlog. So the business looks good. It's the year's playing out as we thought. We did a little better on EPS, and we floated through.
All right, good, because I think those were some faux brown shoots. I see green shoots with you, especially with modernization, which is just so important. I want to thank Judy Marks, Chair, President, CEO of Otis Worldwide. And by the way, for giving us something that's positive in a day where all I hear about is that we never do anything good with China. Thank you so much, Judy. Great to see you.
Take care, Jim. Mike's
back here for the break.
Coming up, do the charts tell the tale of a sell-off to come? Don't beware, be prepared. Stick with Cramer.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It offers flexible spending capacity that adapts to your business. You can also earn up to $395 in annual statement credits on eligible purchases at select business merchants. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
This week, the market's finally been able to find its footing after the brutal sell-off that got rolling in mid-March. Whenever the average manager rally in the face of what's been a really ugly tape, you gotta wonder if it's for real or if we're simply taking a little breather before the beating continues. At moments like this, you know what we have to do? We have to consult the technicals because they can tell you a great deal about the dynamics of the decline. That's why tonight we're going off the charts with the help of, yes, the legendary Larry Williams, technician market historian, who's been the best in the business since I was still going through puberty. Larry's written more than a dozen books. He's created a ton of proprietary technical indicators. He's my go-to guy, and he's got an amazing track record, both now and for many, many years. Hey, look, for us, he called the huge bottom October 2022. Turned out to be the game changer for the market. He predicted the next major leg higher last fall, but most important, back on March 5th, Larry warned us that both the NASDAQ and the S&P were about to get the full Buscemi treatment. Yeah, shoved into the wood chipper and cut to pieces, like Fargo. Specifically, he predicted that the market would start to get hit around mid-March and that things could get very ugly, possibly through late May. In short, he told us to prepare for a meltdown, and a meltdown, frankly, is what we're getting. So now that we've started getting used to the plane, what comes next? All right, let's start with the NASDAQ, all right? Remember, Larry likes to come up with cycle forecasts. That's the crux of his analysis. He looks at the general path of a given security for, say, several years, and then he identifies patterns that seem to repeat themselves over time. If you ask most economists, they say there's no way this kind of method can help pick winners or losers, at least in theory. But in practice, it's surprisingly reliable, at least when Larry Williams is the one doing the analysis. Check out the daily chart of the NASDAQ with Larry's cycle forecast in red, okay? Yeah, this is the picture he showed us in early March that allowed him to call the bottom. And get this, his work showed that the NASDAQ would likely peak around March 15th. And then you had to get out. I mean, like, out of Dodge, like, big time. Because this was going to be an extended period of weakness. So far, he's been dead right. I had a little bounce, like, yesterday. But what does Larry's cycle forecast say now that the decline's already upon us? Take a look. Going by the cycle forecast, the historical pattern, he expects to see lower prices for the NASDAQ into May. Ouchie! That's what my kids used to say. That's why Larry says not to take this week's rally too seriously. In other words, yesterday, no, dead cat bounce. And if you do, any of these rallies are likely to be short term until we reach early May. Now, that's something I agree with. If you're listening to our rather plaintive investing club meeting this afternoon, I think you'd say, wow, Jim's really on the same team as Larry. I did not look at his stuff until I did my stuff. He recommends waiting to buy until we get to that zone of historical safety. And I'm coming around to his view. How about the broader S&P 500? Okay, back on March 5th, Larry showed us this chart of the S&P in black and his cycle forecast in red. Again, he was looking for a peak, this time a little earlier in the month, followed by a lengthy slide. Again, right. So what might be the next leg for the S&P? Check out the same chart from yesterday. This time it took a little longer for the S&P to peak, okay? There was a lag of a few weeks after the cycle turned negative before the index finally started rolling over. But in the end, Larry was right, and the S&P got obliterated over the last few weeks. Again, though, if you're looking to buy on weakness, the cycle forecast says it's probably not safe until May 20th. So there could be a little bit more pain here than there would be in the NASDAQ. And that's why Larry thinks you shouldn't get too attached right now to this week's rebound. And look, we saw some, you know, just think about what we've seen tonight. You know, Meta gets traded, the IBM gets traded. There's real weakness out there. Remember, I keep telling you, we got to understand, the economy is weaker than people think. Larry warned us about NVIDIA on March 5th, too. Wow, this is close to home. It's just a few days before it peaked. Take a look at what he showed us back then with the cycle forecast. He was predicting a meltdown starting around March 12th. Well, that was wrong. It was March 8th. Even though Larry says NVIDIA follows a different cycle than the S&P or the NASDAQ, that cycle was indeed about to turn negative. Wow. So what does he see for NVIDIA next? Take a look at this up-to-date version of the same chart. You can see NVIDIA fell some 200 points, okay, in line with Larry's forecast, and his current projection suggests the stock will experience more weakness until mid-May, when he expects a rebound. That said, Larry also sees a temporary relief rally coming in the near future. Hey, maybe it already got started. I don't know. This is very important, this relief rally. You know I always say own NVIDIA, don't trade it. But you know what? I agree that things could stay ugly for weeks now, that the bond market's created an environment that's much more hostile to growth stocks. That's been my view. If you are nimble out there and you believe in Larry's work, then you should sell NVIDIA into that bounce, and then maybe you can buy it back. The trust that we follow with the CNBC Investment Club, we're just not that nimble. So we're sticking by our position. Hey, speaking of bonds, Larry points out that the best moments to buy the averages come when stocks are undervalued versus high-grade bonds. So look at this chart of the E-mini Dow Jones Industrial Average, specifically the June futures contract. See the blue line at the bottom? That shows how the Dow's trading relative to high-grade bonds, and it's still some distance away from where it has to be. This would be undervalued territory. So we're not there yet. Now, if you look at the history, the Dow got cheap relative to bonds back in October of last year, which is where we bottomed, and then we got the big rally. It's got undervalued relative to bonds in October of 2022 as well. Again, kicking off a tremendous rally. In short, if you wait for the Dow to get cheaper relative to bond prices right here, okay, Larry says you'll typically get better buying opportunities. Why not get better buying opportunities? I mean, if history's any guy, he's absolutely right. Why force it? Here's the bottom line. Back in early March, Larry Williams called the recent stock market meltdown, especially in the NASDAQ. His cycle forecast analysis showed that we were headed for a nasty and prolonged sell-off, dead right. Now the same analysis says not to let this week's rebound, and particularly yesterday's rebound, get to your head. The charts distributed by Larry suggest that we've still got a few more weeks before we can call a bottom, particularly for the NASDAQ. I would not bet against him on this one, including NASDAQ, including NVIDIA. For now. Why? because it makes too much sense for me. Let's take calls. Let's go to Jack in Texas. Jack.
Hello, Mr. Kramer. Thank you. First, thank you for your the work that your team and you do for us home investors.
Thank you.
I have positions for many years in both AMD and NVIDIA. Due to their great performances, they have now significantly outsized positions in my portfolio. I have a high risk tolerance, but I need to take some off the table. Which should I trim? Why? And any thoughts on any new positions? Thank you, Jim, for all you do.
Jack poses, first of all, thank you, Jack. But he poses an essential point that I try to teach in the investing club. There are two things that you need to know. There are something called discipline and something called conviction. If you love a stock and think it's great and the company's doing great, that means you have conviction. But there's also levels of discipline, which means that if you own too much of one stock and it's gotten too big and it's swinging around in your portfolio, you must do some trimming, even if you have conviction. For instance, I think that Jack should sell a little AMD and a little NVIDIA. Yes, I'd say don't trade. But if those positions are too big and his whole fund, his portfolio is moving to them, then what happens is conviction is trumped by discipline. Thank you, Karen Kramer, for drilling that in my head and often putting it on my forehead when I had something that I really liked and it went down because she said, you're an idiot. But that's OK, because, you know, well, I was. OK, let's go to Ron in California. Ron.
Booyah.
Booyah. Hey,
it's Ron. Kramer with a K, calling from Southern California. First-time caller, founding member of the Investment Club.
Bingo. Let's go to work.
Hey, the stock chart on this one is not so hot and is reporting first quarter results on May 7th. Question, buy more, sell, or hold Oddity, ticker ODD.
Oddity was on. They did it. They liked our show. You know, like just some style. You know, it didn't deliver. Look, we got two. We have Elf, and Elf is doing a great job. And then we decided for the Charitable Trust that we were going to buy when it went all the way down some Estee Lauder. Now, Estee Lauder is not for the faint-hearted, okay? But those are the two that are right. Estee Lauder better do this quarter because it's been not good. But Elf, we just had Tarag Aminin, and he just said it's doing really well. That's the one to buy, even though the stock's up a lot. All right, listen to me. The charts interpreted by Larry Williams suggest that we've still got a few more weeks before we can bottom. Hey, judging by what's happening with Meta, you got to believe he's right, huh? I wouldn't bet against him. Now, there's much more Mad Money ahead. We had so many great questions sent in for April's CNBC Investing Club meeting that we had today that we figured we'd answer some of them tonight. I'm giving you a sense of the rigorous work that Jeff Marks and I do in the club, and we're going to hear what's on your mind. Then we've been looking for brown shoots in this market, right? But now we have something to beware of, false brown shoots. I saw one today that really made me angry. It had me steam that I think investors need to be aware of. Of course, oil calls rapid fire in tonight's edition of the Lightning Round. So stay with Kramer. Okay, so earlier today we held our CNBC Investing Club monthly meeting. And once a month we get together, Jeff Marks and I, and we run through the thought process of how we make decisions. Then we discuss our current holdings, and then we take questions from club members. Now, I always say my favorite part of these shows is taking your questions. And we always have more questions than time. So as I promised in the call today, I'm going to give you an inside look at what we do in the Investing Club and take more questions from club members. So you got your chance. I know people love to hear their questions. I never mind it. I don't blame you one bit. You want to hear your name on TV, whatever. It's nice. And I like to be nice, okay? Now, if you like what you hear, now's your chance to join the CNBC Investing Club. Plus, we have a limited time offer happening right now. Take advantage of it and get exclusive member benefits, my daily market strategies, and more. I want you to head to cnbc.com/flashclub for the offer. And no, look, I've been doing this kind of reading, saying buy stuff that I have for like 25 years. It always sounds kind of like cheesy. I'm sorry. I don't know what else to do. I really believe in the club. Okay, there. Now let's get started. Let's go with Cynthia in Georgia. Jim, I was hoping you would guide us regarding the GE spinoffs. Do we keep all the parts or is there any one part that you don't recommend? Hope to see you in person one day. I do too. Is it land on your calendar? I sure wish it was. But maybe we can get there. I love travel. Okay, here's the issue. I actually like all three, but I'm going to rank them. First, I like GE Healthcare. Why? Because I like the long-term strategy that they have to be able to have artificial intelligence in their MRIs. Secondly, I like GE Aerospace. There would be another time when I would have put GE Aerospace ahead of GE Health, but I can't because the aerospace has run so much. And then I like Vinnova the third. Now I don't want to, by no means do I say not own Vinnova, but Vinnova's wind. And sometimes I think that wind could be tough because I don't think everyone wants windmills next to them. So that's the order. GE Healthcare, then GE Aerospace, and then GE Vinnova. All right, next up, we have a question from Cindy, who wants to know, is it too early to invest in a copper stock? What would be your advice in this area? The only copper stock I ever recommend is Freeport. I do not like copper. I think copper is too levered to China. We happen to be listening. I happen to have done a lot of work with Judy Marks from Otis. She knows more about construction in China than anybody. I don't like the construction scene, although 250 million people are moving from the country to the city. I just think that copper, which is so levered to China, is not where I want to be right now. One time it was levered to America, not anymore. Next, we have a question from Mike, who asks, I am keen to get back into aerospace defense stocks like RTX, Lockheed Martin, Northrop Grumman. Do you have any recommendations here? I thought that the RTX quarter was just magnificent. Now, it's Greg Hayes, and he's departing. I'm sure he's got a good team after him. But RTX had just a remarkable quarter, and they had that problem with their geared turbofan. But it was like kind of like a it was a construction problem. It's completely solved. It's not like Boeing, and that they have a great balance sheet, and they have Raytheon, and that is the one you want. Okay, it's Pratt Whitney, just, you know. All right, next up, we have a question from Brad, who asks, when the market is run and you're up nicely, I know you taught us to take some profit. Bulls make money, bears make money, pigs get slaughtered. My question is, do you ever take profit on your core S&P 500 holdings or just the individual stocks? Just the individual stocks is the answer to that. Now, look, I have been in the market through thick and thin since 1979. And for the most part, I let everything run, okay? And because I did, and I can't own individual stocks. Remember, individual stocks that's the province of people who've done TV shows and talk about stocks. But it's been right. I sometimes you have to take pain. And people don't like to take pain. But taking pain is what got me to Apple at this point, what got me to NVIDIA at this point. And I know those stocks are going down right now. I don't care. I'm going to ride them because I believe in them long term. Next, we have a question from Brian in Florida, who asked Jim and Jeff Marks, my partner, thank you for everything you do. You often talk about the bond market, but what is the easiest and quickest way to keep track of the bond market? As a newish investor, I struggle to understand. CNBC.com has great indicators about the bond market. It's got everything you need, and I don't want to send anybody to anywhere else because that's how good our bond information is. By the way, CNBC.com, it's an undervalued site when it comes to all sorts of things. Go there. I go first thing in the morning. Now, let's go to Kevin, who wants to know, is it time to buy the battered Boeing or United Health yet? They seem to be in the same sort of category right now. Solid company, believer by legitimate concern, but still good long-term investment. These are two very different companies. Now, Boeing only has one competitor, which is Airbus, but I am a balance sheet fanatic, and the balance sheet for United Health is really good. They did have that terrible hack. I think that they did not report the hack in time. I didn't like that. I don't really care for that industry. Humana pulled its forecast. So I'm going to say this. I don't want you to buy either one. Why do I have to make it either or? You know, if you put a gun to my head and say, which one do you pick? I say, first, take the gun away from my head. And second, don't buy either. All right. Next up, Thomas in Florida wants to know, when is it OK to violate your cost basis? Let's say I'm up 30% in the stock. I want more shares, but not sure being up 30% is a good time to buy. OK, we do have special situations in the club where we periodically say, all right, here's a stock that we really like. Our basis is very, very low. I'll give you a good example. OK, let's say we study Meta. We have a really low basis in Meta. And we decide that we have to pick up some Meta because all that's happened is that Mark Zuckerberg has so-called sandbagged us. In other words, the stock is down because he's given a really dire forecast, even though the company's doing well. That would be an example of when I might be willing to violate my basis because it's so far down. But it takes a lot of discipline to violate basis for me. And I don't like to do it because I can show you chapter and verse. I've been doing this for 20 years with this charitable trust. There are so few times that violating my basis has made me money that I tend to just say, forget about it. Now, let's go to Chris in Colorado, who say, would the club consider adding a REIT to the portfolio to increase the portfolio's diversity? If so, would the timing be related to interest rates coming down due to the Federal Reserve cutting rates? Yes, it would be related to the Fed cutting rates. The ones I'm interested in, I'm very interested in Simon, and I'm very interested in Tanger, and I'm very interested in Federal Realty. All three of those work for me as situations that I might want to buy. All right, thank you to all of our fantastic club members who sent in the questions. I mean it. I'm going to say a couple things that are kind of hokey, all right? One, yes, I did have to recommend buying it. And you could say being a member of the club. You say, God, Jim's really showing for the club. But how about this? Jim spends much of his life working in the club, so he feels proud of it. How about that? Second, I do like reading your names. I like to see you on the street. Why? Because I'm like just another guy, okay? And if you like this stuff and you like the and you like what I do, I am thrilled, okay? So I hope you sign up, and Mad Money is back after the break.
Coming up, hit us with your best shot. An electrified fast-fire lightning round is next.
And then the lightning round is over. Are you ready, Steve? That's over the lightning round. I want to start with Tim in New York. Tim.
Hey, what's up, Jim? It's Tim from New York. I'm calling about the stock Cloudflare. Considering its exposure to AI, is now a good time to buy?
Matthew Prince rocks. I would be a buyer. I would buy it slowly because we got big selling going on in AI stock Meta. That's how I regard it now. I need to go to Chris in California. Chris.
Double booyah, booyah, Jim. Thank you for inspiring young investors. We appreciate you.
I'm doing everything I can, man. It's a tough market. What do we got here?
Exxon Enterprise.
Oh, man. I just said to Jeff Marks and Ben Stoda today that Axon is so good. We used to have Rick Smith on all the time. Remember, that wasn't a taser, but it's really just an ecosystem of law enforcement. And even here, it's still good. I need to go to Mitchell in Texas. Mitchell.
Jimmy Choo, what's up?
I don't know. You tell me.
Maybe better after you hear this story. Jimmy, I got a stock that's trading at the average market multiple of right now, let's say 20, 23, 22, and this stock's going to quadruple in earnings over the next 2 years. What do you think about First Solar?
Oh, I like First Solar. It's actually the only solar next tracker that I really like here. The other ones are all kind of like they're faux solar. I like that faux today. All right, let's go to Mike in Illinois. Mike.
Hey, Jim, how are you?
I'm doing good, Mike. How about you?
I'm doing well. I know you have Coterra and you were maybe considering some other stocks in energy. Want to know what you think about this stock. It's the number one stock in its sector. It's in Mexico, Vista Oil and Gas.
Yeah, Mexico is actually changing its rules. It should be, I think, good for Vista. I would actually own Vista. I think it's a good situation. Let's go to Liza in New York. Liza.
Hi, Jim. Long-time listener and second-time caller.
Perfect. Let's go to work.
Should I be patient with Crown Castle, CCI?
I think it's 6.5% yield. They are, if they've been mismanaged, you betcha. Can they bottom here? I think with that 6.5% yield, it can. It's not a totally bad business. It's kind of it's a tower business. It's not that much worse than all the rest. I think you're okay. Let's go to Charlie in California. Charlie.
Hey, Jim, my man. I recently bought into an IPO. I'm up 15% on it. The stock's at Astera Labs. Do I hold? Buy more?
No. You want to take the gain here, and I'll tell you why. Because we got a level of IPOs coming your way. It's going to make everybody sell these to buy the next IPOs. I don't want you to be caught in that maelstrom. Let's go to Carrie in Pennsylvania. Carrie.
Hey, Jim.
Hey, Carrie, what's going on?
And I was wondering if I should invest in Liquidia.
Liquidia. Okay, let me think there. This is so speculative. I don't know, man. You're dice rolling here with this thing. You're just dice rolling. I'm not going to be in the dice roll game. It's too hard. And that, ladies and gentlemen, conclusion of the Lightning Round.
The Lightning Round is sponsored by Charles Schwab. Coming up, from railroads to tech, Cramer is looking for a bargain. Where's the next bull market hiding? Find out when we return.
I'm on the lookout for weakness because I think that March was not a good month for the economy. which is ironically a good thing for the stock market. Remember, we need brown shoots, signs of newfound weakness, so the Fed can justify cutting interest rates. The last time we heard from the Fed, they were upset that the economy remained too hot. Today, though, we got a few more brown shoots than we bargained for. First, the very reliable Norfolk Southern missed estimates. The company actually pre-announced soft numbers earlier this month, but perhaps no one noticed. Or maybe they thought they were sandbagging because the consensus estimates didn't come down enough. And today, they disappointed investors again with the full report. That stings, especially because Norfolk Southern came on the show less than a month ago. It seemed like all systems go, but hey, things happen. Now, I always like to buy the rails at a discount.
All aboard!
They're among the most reliable regular earners, kind of like Ralph from The Sopranos. But I don't know about this one. While Norfolk Southern made a settlement for the East Palestine train derailment, this was still a down quarter for both sales and earnings. I was surprised by the weakness in intermodal and coal. If the economy were really strong, those two cargoes would have been much better. There's a reason Norfolk Southern stock was down 3.6%, and it wasn't because it had an upside surprise, because it didn't. Worse, we got an inline number from Old Dominion Freight, a trucker, and then the stock dropped by $24, 11%. Brown shoots galore, or maybe overreaction, but it doesn't matter. It happened. We've now seen weakness from J.B. Hunt, Norfolk Southern, and Old Dominion. These transports are the backbone of the economy, and they're also great predictors. At the same time, we need to be aware of false brown shoots. Today, we heard from an analyst who covers Apple and said that Division Pro is a big disappointment. What happened? The analyst said that Apple's not going to be able to make the consensus estimates of 700,000 to 800,000 Vision Pros. They cut the numbers to between 400,000 and 450,000. He said, wow. Hold on, wait a second, though. We looked up what the analysts were expecting back in February when it launched, and back then, the analysts only figured Apple would sell 400,000. Talk about faux brown shoots. That's outrageous. What a straw man. If Apple can sell 400,000 units of a $3,500 product that is just now having software written for it, I think it's doing great. Right now, the Vision Pro is being marketed as a consumer product. Without a subsidy from a consumer company like an iPhone, that's a steep price tag. We know that. But what if Apple pivots and decides to market this thing not just as a consumer product, but as a business product? Hear me out. When I was at NVIDIA GTC conference, I got to sit in a Nissan sports car, check out the dashboard, jumped out over the rocker panels, kicked the tires, and looked under the hood, barely missing my fingers when I closed it. The only thing is, there was no car! It's all an illusion generated by a Vision Pro hooked up to an NVIDIA supercomputer. I was sitting in a chair in an empty room. Last week, I was at a Carvana dealer. I went to the used car vending machine to simulate car buying. I found myself thinking that it would have been a heck of a lot easier if I had a Vision Pro and picked a car from that. I'd love to do the same thing with a house, walk through the house with my Vision Pro. More important, I bet the best use for this thing is industrial. If everyone is constructing a building with the Vision Pro, things would go much more smoothly, at least according to NVIDIA's Jensen Huang, the construction factory's largest business in the world. If you could cut waste and test out potential changes on the Vision Pro before you put them in reality, and it's what's known as a digital twin, then I say that $3,500 price tag is way too cheap. No matter what, I'm cool with finding real brown shoots like the transports, which are great predictors of future commerce. Those brown shoots said we might finally be cooling down in the economy just when people thought it was not, and that's one day how we'll get a bottom. But bogus green shoots in tech, I say give me a break. Like I said, as always, a bull market summer. I promise I'll find it just for you right here, Mad Money. I'm Jim Cramer. See you tomorrow. Last call starts now.
All opinions expressed by Jim Cramer on this podcast are solely Cramer's opinions and do not reflect the opinions of CNBC, NBC Universal, or their parent company or affiliates, and may have been previously disseminated by Cramer on television, radio, internet, or another medium. You should not treat any opinion expressed by Jim Cramer as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of his opinion. Cramer's opinions are based upon information he considers reliable, but neither CNBC nor its affiliates and/or subsidiaries warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such. To view the full Mad Money disclaimer, please visit cnbc.com/Mad Money disclaimer.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you. Like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively FedEx.